Okay.
Okay, yeah.
Chickity chick. Yep, sure enough.
For what is a hot dog if not a meat squirt gun made out of meat? Am I right?
Well, I think that it's more like the hot dog is the fuel and your body is the squirt guns. The hot dog is the water in this situation.
That makes much more sense. I was going to say, if you're eating hot dogs.
And I load hot dogs into my body of squirt gun and just fire off.
And your butthole is the super soaker. Right, yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. CO2 tank is to paintball gun as hot dog is to human body. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
See, I was thinking like, you snip off the top of the hot dog like a cigar, and then you take a knife and you run it around the interior of the hot dog skin, which is easier with something with a natural casing like a Kunstler, and then you just squeeze it and it just shoots on out.
Oh,
like
I
a bolt, you know, like a crossbow bolt.
See, I just maybe hot dogs you as are a crossbows, gangster, just holding. A hot dog that just chewing on it, dripping out of your mouth.
I've maybe done that with beef jerky before, for sure, as an adult. But you know,
yeah,
Lee, that's a really good way to shut down the is a hot dog a taco conversation. You go, actually, a hot dog is a crossbow, let me tell you why. And people will just slowly back away from you.
Is this why I'm having trouble making friends in a new town?
Maybe, no. If you lead with that, I mean.
No, maybe. I don't think so. I think that anybody would that's like the best question for a new friend.
That is true.
Because then you know.
Is if a somebody... hot dog a crossbow? And then they's like, well, I guess if you snipped off the end like a cigar, and it's like, they know! They understand!
New best friend!
Also, the hot dog is my personal crossbow to bear. Because I was crucified on the meat too.
Do you know that feeling when everyone is talking about a movie that you haven't seen? Have you ever felt compelled to make some vague comments just so you can join in the conversation? Well, what if you were in too deep? Do you think you could convince everyone that you'd seen it? Or do you think your version would be so much better that no one would care? Here at Faking Movies, we're always the ones who haven't seen the movie.
Anything you can do, I can do better. I can do anything better than you.
Oh, you can.
Yes, I can.
Oh, you can.
Yes, I can.
Oh, you can.
Yes, I can. Yes, I can.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to Faking Movies. This is, and here's where I'm going to put my powers of guessing and cold reading Seth to skill here. 264. Did I get it right?
I'll never tell.
This is exactly the time to tell is the thing.
That's one way to do it, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Hmm. It was.
Okay. Cool. Which was nice. What I guessed before the show started, and then you decided to be coy about it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's true. I don't know. I'm just in a mood.
Yeah, I know.
I'm gonna make it everyone else's problem.
You started,
especially
Zach. It's like you're
that
getting
is the way.
You're getting your rhythm back. You know, you're in your Stella era rework.
Oh, groove back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm gonna find a sexy Jamaican man. Isn't that what happened in that movie?
I don't know where it's located specifically, but she does go on.
I do remember
a
there are those
vacation.
Action figures that you could get from that sketch
from that
SNL
sketch.
SNL.
Oh yeah,
when you buy milk at a fast food restaurant. Yes.
Mm-hmm. No! It's coleslaw. It's a coleslaw company. Where, you know, they give you the mayonnaise.
Mix it together, yeah. It's always the best when we recount jokes that we didn't come up with. Yeah, this is the best thing that we do.
That's my favorite thing.
This is going to be maybe an odd episode for a couple reasons. You know, I've got to give credit to Zach, who is recording in a power outage right now.
Yeah,
it's really
kind of impressive.
On a wing and a prayer and a battery and a mobile hotspot.
The only perceived downside is that I've got a lot of candles and it is the summertime and it is fucking hot in here already. So
yeah,
it's going to get weirder and weirder for sure.
Would you say that the living is easy?
Not quite. It might have been previously.
That it's star Greg Kinnear singing that song.
At least this week, and we're not segueing yet because I'm not ready to.
Okay,
at least this week, it makes a little more sense that your Porgy and Bess touchstone is Greg fucking Kinnear. Yeah, Zach, I gotta say, super commendable. I only had to threaten kicking you off the show and replacing you with friend of the show Kev once for you to come up with this solution. So
being replaced in literally any context is like my worst nightmare. So yeah, that's a real do or die for me for sure. Yeah.
Oh yeah, it's probably. It's probably a more extreme version of the feeling I get constantly in our group chat when I say anything about my life and then no one responds for 5 hours and then talks about something else. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
Oh dear.
Our invasion of the body snatchers.
Grievance airing time? Oh, okay.
No.
Oh.
No.
Could be.
That's reason one why this might be an odd show. Hopefully there won't be. I don't know that there's gonna be any delay. Hopefully there won't be. That'd be more convenient if there wasn't, but who knows? We'll see. Powering through. Zach is a true hero. Much like Blue Beetle and Booster Gold.
Yeah. Blue Beetle and Booster Gold. Topical. I saw the trailer for Blue Beetle when I went to go see the newest Spoiderman.
Yeah, it looks really it looks like a movie that they intended to release on Max and then decided to put in theaters.
Yep. It definitely looks like that. And
all those movies look like that now, though. I have not seen a superhero movie trailer in, I don't know, a very long time and been like, oh, cool.
Other than Across the Spider-Verse.
Sure.
Which was very good.
Any animated Spooters is pretty okay in my book, yeah.
It was super good again.
Yeah, it was great. And I actually didn't realize that it was... Like, I knew that they were going to make another one. I didn't know that it was supposed to be... Sorry for spoilers for anyone. It was explicitly a cliffhanger ending. Like, this is part one of two.
Yeah, me fucking neither. Mm. And I was like, wow, it really seems... It's 2 hours in and it really seems like they're ramping up for something.
This is how I felt... It's kind of like, so I had a kind of a flipped experience when I first saw Fellowship of the Ring. So like me and my partner went to see this new Spider-Verse movie and like, I'm into it. And the whole, like the reveals that happen at the end and the movie is over. And I went, wait, what? And she looked at me and said, it's so long. It was obviously not going to conclude. I was like, I didn't know that. Like,
no, I had no idea. Cause I was in it. The whole time.
Yeah, I was sucked in. Admittedly, and we talked about this, Seth, I think the opening sequence is the high point of the movie, unfortunately. But
the
it's
opening
still very
sequence
good
is
throughout.
Really good. And then also, you know, another high point was weirdly the end credits.
Wow.
Yeah.
It was really, really, really well done, confusingly. And it's an end credit song.
Song is fun. Okay.
Yeah, it was good stuff.
Yeah.
But like when I went to see Fellowship of the Ring in 2001, never forget, I had no idea. I had no idea what Lord of the Rings was.
That is how the world healed from 9/11.
I was going to say, did you have no idea that 9/11 was going to happen? That feels like a summer movie. No, maybe.
No, it came out like Christmas Day or something.
It was during Christmas time, and me and all my cousins were going to the movies, and most of them were going to see Harry Potter, and I was like, I guess I'll go see Harry Potter. And then one of my other cousins was like, yo, I don't want to see that either. Do you want to see this Lord of the Rings thing? And I went, yeah, I don't fucking care. Let's go see that. It got to the end, and I was like, wait, we don't find out what happens? They're like, no. It's like, there's going to be three. And I was like, oh, word. And it's Frodo and Sam look at Mordor, and I thought, well, that looks so close. How are they going to stretch that to two movies? And I was very wrong. So
sure enough.
Yeah.
What's the am I stupid? Is the second Lord of the Rings called The Two Towers?
Yes.
Man, what if that was the one that came out in 2001? They would have had to delay that
this
for
September.
A bit. I was like, no, it can't be called that. Am I stupid?
It's like, listen, guys, we know that the last one got nominated for tons of awards and was a huge box office smash, but, like, you realize, you get it. You get why you can't.
We all get it. Oof.
Oh, boy.
Oh, man. Hey, the other reason that this might be a weird episode is this is, I believe, the season premiere of, what is this now, like season 5 or 6 of Faking Movies? What season are we on? I can't remember.
I think it's five. I think it's 5.
Okay. Uh-huh. Because this is the new era of Faking Movies where there's going to be some friction between me and Zach versus Seth. Because Zach and I have recently joined the Bourgeois Bean, in that we are both in the Rancho Gordo Bean Club.
That is
and,
true.
God yeah, damn Seth it.
You know what? Not. We'll eat beans. Let them eat cake. How about that? Yeah.
I hate cake. I'm just going to try to jump on that and make my own joke, but that's just good.
Man, we had only our first bean experience, and it was out of this world. I was so jizzed up on it. It's so fun.
Yeah. Everybody out there, if you've ever doubted spending more than 99 cents for a pound of beans, you should stop doubting it, because holy shit, it is so much better.
It is a lot better. It is way more than the 99 cents. Way, way more. You do, childlike, feel like you're part of a secret club. I think that's a lot of the draw for me, like being able to talk to you about beans, and they send you this cool newsprint newsletter thing. It is exactly
recipes and stuff.
Yeah, it is exactly the like sort of clandestine bean experience I was hoping for. It's so stupid and I love it. It's
Seth's
amazing.
Face right now is like he's so sad. It's like we took a puppy away from him. I'm sorry, Seth. Just,
I wouldn't care if you took a puppy away from me. I don't even like dogs. I care that I can't be a member of the Bean Club.
Soon enough, my dude.
Next invite that either of us gets is coming to you. I'm sorry. It's just literally we have talked about cooking beans on here before, and you scoffed at the idea of cooking beans from dry. So like,
I do it all the time.
It didn't sound like you did then when you told me that in the past. All
right, well, archivist, go into the archive, us out. And
Seth, I'm not supposed to say this. This is part of the initiation, but there's like a checklist of, is this person worthy of Bean Club? And you failed like 4 out of the 6 of them, so we got to work on that.
Oh, damn. That's fair. Yeah. That's fair.
We're gonna get you there, though. We're gonna get you there.
Yeah. Okay. You'll slowly mold me into somebody worthy of the secret Bean Club.
We'll definitely get you in our downline soon, or the club soon.
Zach, sidebar. What you're suggesting is one of us signs up for a second one, charges Seth the actual membership fee plus a bunch of money just to wet our beaks. Is that what you're getting at?
I believe, yes. We are the middleman in the pyramid of beans, yes.
And then we can buy more beans with his money.
Yeah, we're only going to use our evil powers for good, and that is buy more beans and eat them, I guess.
Zach, what have you tried so far?
We did the
bean talk.
Do you get to choose what beans?
No, that's the funny
part. Quarter.
That's exactly it. Like it's a farm. It's like a farm share. You don't.
It's a dry CSA. Yeah.
Every quarter they send you a selection of fine beans, and you get I think free shipping for if you want additional beans.
I don't know what kind of lunatic would need more beans, but yeah.
I don't know, man. We're almost empty on our beans.
That's fair. Yeah. I mean, once you do start the bean lifestyle, it is kind of hard to stop. I do feel like I've fundamentally changed as a person a little bit.
I live in a vegetarian house. What are you?
Seth, you wouldn't understand. Someday.
You don't have to scour for alternative sources of protein, Seth.
Yeah,
no, again, never.
Our bourgeois lifestyle, we can eat all the proteins and we choose to eat beans.
Yeah, I definitely haven't made 4 different tofu dishes in the last week.
Sure enough.
Well, that sounds nice.
Lee, I did the white limas in vodka sauce that you suggested, which is not one of the Rancho Gordo suggested recipes, but god damn, it was good. Yeah.
Yeah, that was my partner. She was just like, I want vodka sauce, but we have all these beans. I'll just make beans and make vodka sauce. And we're like, turns out this is really fucking good.
Worked like a charm.
It does sound really good. Mm-hmm. You know what it would be better on? A pizza. Beans, vodka sauce.
Croissant dough. Yeah.
Well, I don't know that we need to invite beans to that party specifically, but maybe.
Oh, Look,
I don't know
whose bean Craig.
Zach, I'm pretty sure I might have to send your beans to Seth.
Oh
now.
No! Yeah. Oh God, Lee, don't tell the club. Oh please.
I'm good for it. I'll eat two beans tomorrow.
Yeah. I'll do my bean penance for sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, I have to check what the
bean
what the
penitent
is.
Man will pass.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'll have to check the cost is on their website because one of the markets near me sells a wide selection of Rancho Gordo beans. Yeah. Of course, I assume they're not as fresh as the ones straight from the source. So,
freshness in dried beans is maybe less of an issue, I think.
But no, yeah. No. It turns out it is a pretty big issue.
Oh, see, I've only been in the bean club for like 2 weeks. You know so much more than I do.
It turns out that dry beans are completely edible for like 50 years, but after the first like 6 months, they degrade like enormously, like in quality. So, yeah.
No shit. Good to know. Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's so why the Rancho Gordos take so much less time to cook.
Yeah, I was going to say, so every pack of dried beans I've ever bought from every grocery store has clearly already been way past that 6 months, because they've been there for years, presumably. Yeah,
right.
That makes sense.
This is great. This is great radio right
it
now.
It is.
This is good stuff. Yeah.
This is truly season six of the podcast. just bean chat. Yeah.
Yeah, the original showrunner left, you know. So.
Yeah. They replaced all of the characters. We're all beans now.
We're in the bourgeois bean, which is a thing that Zach made up a few days ago that I just really love. Seth, I can't believe that your touchstone for Porgy and Bess is Greg fucking Kinnear. Speaking of Greg Kinnear, Zach is making a movie this week.
Oh yeah, look at that. Sure enough.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, it's a long one. So this movie is called Autofocus. Pretty reasonable title, honestly. Great cast, really. No losers in here. We have Greg Kinnear, Willem Dafoe, Maria Bello, Rita Wilson, and Ed Begley Jr. God damn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a whole bunch.
I will say up front, Ed Begley Jr. is in what, like one scene? I just thought it'd be fun to give you Ed Begley Jr.
Sure. Yeah, he's sort of at the beginning of that, we'll get to it.
He will be there's in about one scene of my movie, too, so that's perfect, yeah.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a come up and a decline kind of plot at points in this movie, and he's definitely at the early stages of the come up. So.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, mm-hmm. Okay. Cool beans. See,
anyway,
see what I did there. Okay.
Oh, I didn't, and now I do.
I have a very short preface. I had one other title, didn't go with it. I forget what it even was. So, to preface my movie, I was unfortunately tricked for the second time in I think the year 2023 into watching a right-wing/Christian agenda movie by accident. This time it
I
was
need you
called...
to explain no you need yeah, to what? Yeah you need to back
what?
Up and tell the, us more
I,
like
I'm
about
I'm going to go forward and tell you more it will make a lot more sense.
Okay,
so this movie was called Nefarious, which was parading as a Christian horror movie. Well,
oh,
I saw it
was that horror movie. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I saw it as a horror movie, and then when I was confused and reading more about it, it was a Christian horror movie. Words that make absolutely no fucking sense together. What even is that? That is nothing. Mm-hmm. The other one, way more...
I don't know. That's a very like evangelical thing of like the terror of hell. Only they made this one about like a guy on death row with a demon. Was that
there's, it? There's a demon inside of him, and you get to the end and you go, that wasn't that Christian. And then it's all anti-abortion in the last like 15 minutes. And I was like, where the fuck did that come from?
Jesus. Fuck.
Yeah. Real bad. Real stupid. Real bad. Anyway. Yeah. Wasted life on that one. The second one, which we watched.
It has Glenn Beck in the cast. Of course
it does. It has Glenn Beck playing Glenn Beck, which, again, we were like 30 minutes into it before I realized that. And I was like, oh, no. Oh, God.
Yeah, I didn't know he was still, like, around.
I went down a very violent wiki spiral on him yesterday because I had that same thing.
He became, at least on the surface, less of a fucking nut job. But I think he's still a shitty right winger.
He is very much a shitty right winger. He mostly went away because he had rampant health problems for like a decade.
Oh.
Yeah. And is
why didn't,
he
why didn't Jesus solve those? Isn't that what
you know,
he does?
You would think so. I think he did have some excuse for it where it's like he had like macular degeneration and it was something about like he was living an impure life or something. He shoehorned that thing in somehow because he's a fucking
idiot. All right. Jesus. Yeah. It's like when fucking athletes or celebrities are like, I had this porn addiction and that's why my family fell apart. And then I found Jesus. It's like, no, you cheated on your wife, dude.
Yeah.
That's what that was the problem.
Uh-huh. Always
you weren't, open and honest in a consensual relationship. Like, that was what happened.
Yeah, that will do it. The second one, which we really have to just gloss over this. I probably mentioned it before. It's called Run, Hide, Fight. A thing that was, I don't know. It looked like it's a school shooting movie, and it looked like, oh, this is going to be cool. Like the kids triumph. Right. Already a little rough, but like the kids seem to triumph and like the, you know, like good wins in the end kind of. Turns out this is another one. I was like 3/4 of the way through and I was like, this is making a turn that I'm a little confused by. Looked it up. Ben Shapiro's production company made this as, I think, like a Hooray the Second Amendment thing. But
yeah, and it's distributed by the Daily Wire.
Yes, no, yeah, exactly.
Jesus Christ.
This is not a thing that you find on a cursory glance at the IMDb page, unfortunately.
Sure.
And so, yeah, I got like most of
the
way through.
The only thing that I'm taking solace in is the fact that you definitely pirated these things.
Oh, yeah. Though $0 went to these people for sure. Yeah. Yeah. Weirdly, so he thought this was a triumphant, like, 2A thing. And it was actually like, wow, guns are horrific and they only cause problems. Like, he did not accomplish the thing he set out to accomplish in any capacity whatsoever, which is kind of
crazy
nice.
How often arguments from fringe fucking violent people where they think they're making their case in a very clear way do nothing but, you know,
reinforce the fact that is a horrible thing.
Absolutely. How did you come across, like, initially, I saw the trailer for that horror movie in a movie theater, so like I get that one. I've never heard of this other one. How did you come
contact
with these?
The way I find the weirdo movies is like, if I'm watching a movie with somebody in it and I'm like, oh, I like that person, I'll just go through their like upcoming IMDb.
Oh, sure.
And write them all down without there really being any information about them. Like, oh, that premise seems cool, because you only really get the summary before they're like, you know, actually completed and coming out. And then I go through that list every once in a while and try to download them, and if it comes up, I go, great. And that's the most thought that I put into any of that. And so I need a screening process that point being,
like, when I like put a bunch of Peter Fonda films on
and we end up doing a weird number of
Peter Fonda stuff. Yeah,
we had a lot of Peter Fonda
when he died.
But yeah, I don't like this world that we seem to be entering, where I have to do a deep dive on every movie I'm about to watch to like figure out if the production company is like third or fourth tied to some like horrible person from the right wing. Like, this is an insane universe and I don't want to live in that. So I'm hoping that doesn't continue. Anyway, this does play into my movie today. So, Okay. Here we go. It's a little long. Try to stay with me. I don't know if you guys have heard, but the political divide in our country has really been heating up these past, 250 years.
I hadn't noticed it, but it makes sense.
So the moral panic side of things has been going on for at least...
I do have a hard time talking with my family members.
Right.
Now that you mention it.
Yeah, sure enough, yeah. The moral panic side of politics has been going on for at least since, you know, the throat goat was in office.
I mean, in office as first lady.
She was probably in the office physically, I don't know.
Yeah,
close enough.
We're talking about Nancy Reagan, by the way.
For sure.
I feel like everyone who listens to this knows that already.
Yeah,
true.
Definitely. Yeah. Noted right-wing shitlord Willem Dafoe, am here to end the culture war that plagues our nation and threatens our children.
He would play that part pretty well.
Yes, very clearly.
And then also star in Antichrist.
These are sort of, you need similar facial expressions and whatnot for sure.
And in both movies they have to get a dick double because his dick is so big it's unbelievable.
For this character he will absolutely need a tenth of the dick that he actually has. Today we at the deceptively benign sounding Institute for the Betterment of American Youth, IBAY for short, present Autofocus.
That is exactly what that would be called. Yeah.
We present Autofocus, and you can't see it, but it's spelled Auto, F-A-U-X-C-U-S-S. So faux cuss. I just chopped and screwed it right off the top.
Yeah, you did it.
You pulled it. Good job.
I'm sighing not because of what you did. I'm sighing because of how realistic it is.
Of the existence of this thing.
Oh, trust me. It's going to get way more infuriating. Yeah.
Although there's definitely going to be a member on the board of governors who is like, I don't feel comfortable with that French term in our name. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Southern people who aren't like that. I just defaulted into that because I'm
It seems
that's me. That's like my problem.
The right thing, yeah. Mm-hmm. So this new tool automatically removes harmful language and messages from mainstream media, including movie, TVs, music, and life generally. So
God, I think there are like right wing programs that claim to do this. Like,
oh yeah,
and they fail, of course, because there's no way that you could.
Not all of them.
Oh,
our first major breakthrough, Kids Bop, and later Meow Bops, revolutionized the childhood experience, allowing kids to enjoy.
I didn't know that I was part of the problem.
Look that up on YouTube, everybody. Allowing kids to
look up Meow Bops.
Please do. Yep. Mm-hmm. Just like Kids Bop, different place. Okay. Allowing kids to enjoy all the same media, but with none of the pesky sex, drugs, harsh language, or fun just at all. Using emergent AI technology, we can now do the same thing on the fly. So you don't have to carefully limit your child's intake to pre-censored experiences. Our new autofocus technology will police the world around your child as it's happening, so they can go about their normal lives without having to worry about being exposed to dangerous ideas that are increasingly present in the modern landscape. We'll be rolling these devices out starting next year in America's heartland, in government agencies, shared public spaces, and critically, schools and libraries.
Mm-hmm.
We slow fade into a close-up of Willem's face looking extra super Green Goblin scary. Like,
yeah. Smug.
Very smug. He's a bit of a fascist himself, yeah.
Very menacing, yeah. And then smash cut to imposing title card, autofocus, spelled the weird way.
Mm-hmm.
So, we're setting the stage. It's kind of like the beginning of the Purge movie, the first one, where they like you're part of the experience thing. Anyway.
Oh, I haven't seen that. Is it anything like that movie, The Binge?
Nothing. It is also good. It is not as good as The Binge, but that is a very obvious statement. Nothing is as good as The Binge. Yeah.
Okay.
That's true.
I'm now trying to remember if I wrote down my notes for a proposed Binge 3 that I'm going to, email into the ether.
Yeah. We did have a real thread going there that one day. Yeah. Okay. After the infomercial code open, we shift to our actual characters, Greg and Rita. They're uncharacteristically moderate liberals in an unnamed southern state. I have the same prejudices that Lee has, apparently. We have some establishing scenes to indicate that they're doing, we disagree with a lot of the general consensus here, but not enough to really rock the boat kind of upbringing with their children. So it's like, try to impart these sort of geographically unpopular but obviously good morals to their kids in private while doing their best to explain to them that, there's a delicate balance with having to interact with the world outside of this house. We live in a place where this it can be complicated and whatever. Like, it's hard to explain this to kids, but they're doing their best essentially. Yeah.
So these are people who have a "in this house we believe in" sign on their lawn in an area.
They don't have it on their lawn. They have it pasted to some inside wall in their house, I think.
I see. Got it.
Again, they're very much in this area, and so they're they had to go there for a job or something, and so they're we have to impart to them that this sucks, but also try to live amongst the thing and not be ostracized as kids or get into fist fights because other kids' parents taught them crazy shit or whatever, that kind of thing.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah. So as we're sort of going through the motions, establishing all this stuff, we see the opening infomercial playing on a TV in the kitchen in the morning as they're all eating breakfast, and everybody pauses conversation because this is very sort of imposing and weird, and they stop and watch this with very obvious concern on everyone's face. So we then shift scenes to the school, where Maria Bello is our cool teach, and she has a kind of secret, but not in a weird way, relationship with our main kids. I think she's also a transplant in this place. So she shares all of our family's ideologies. Yeah. Shares the ideologies, but obviously also toes a very careful line in school, understanding that school is a very polarizing political place now. And that's where a lot of these battles are being fought, very unfortunately. So
confusingly.
Yeah. So I'm thinking she like slips the kids like Bad Religion CDs and other mostly innocuous but endearing like little small gestures. Again, we're supposed to like her as the audience, so but yeah, so they're clear outcasts, and she sees very much the forest for the trees in this whole thing, and is like, you know, okay, I want to try to help these kids as much as I can because they clearly are in the same kind of situation that I am, but generationally different, I guess. So.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I think shortly afterwards, there's an assembly where Ed Begley Jr. is obviously the principal because his general being.
Yeah, that tracks. Yeah.
That checks. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And he very wearily announces that we're rolling out this new mandated program in the school. Autofocus. So everyone by now has seen the commercials and the news stories, so it's not like a big surprise, but you can tell there's a bit of a split between the majority being obviously concerned about the encroachment on their lives. Like, nobody really wants to be spied on in that way, regardless of the sort of political and ethical implications. Mm-hmm. And then like the sort of vocal few who have been indoctrinated by their parents to think that this is a good thing. Like, any win for this conservatism is a good thing. And it's like, you're not really looking at the actual heart of the thing.
Yeah, that's
like,
in fact the opposite of what you usually say.
Right. Yeah, my freedom.
Unless
please
of
encroach
it
on
involves
them.
Women or minorities or
for sure.
Anyone
well,
who's not a white
religious
man.
Religious views.
Those are your freedoms, not my freedoms. Yeah. Yes. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So this whole thing kicks off, and we see it immediately making some small but impossible to ignore like corrections in things. Like, you know, when Maria Bello says a thing that is deemed sort of deviant given the models or whatever, not even woke, it's just like really little stuff to start with. So you know, we highlight Maria especially because
you
again,
could do a lot
sort of
with
focus.
This I think it'd be very interesting.
Well, and obviously like how AI is going to affect our world is increasingly a thing everyone's talking about, and you know, I think we're at this stage currently where it's like, okay, it's getting a little weird and we don't entirely understand the implications, but like something's happening for sure. So,
well,
I think
and it's like
here.
Still at a point where it is essentially only as smart as the info you put into it. And yet we're like, you know, there's a writer strike going on because it's like, but what if we just let that do the thing?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Right. In certain cases, it's very innocuous. And in certain cases, it is very affecting people's lives.
And in
sure.
this case, it's like, what if we just let the AI figure out what's offensive?
No. Definitely not that. That is essentially the crux of this movie. So we get to the middle bits. This is the sort of me explaining the movie, not what actually happens in the movie. The AI uses contemporary techniques like reinforcement learning, where it adapts and refines the model as it interacts with its environment to get it better at classifying and correcting things as time progresses. So it's an adaptive thing, which is very critical to where this goes. Because machines inherently can't actually understand like the human and most importantly subjective concepts like morality, it can't maximize for things like our nightmare antagonists are trying to pinpoint. Like, if you feed it things that they might, like strong family relationships are good, and also guns are good, this is an obvious logical contradiction. Like, it just sort of doesn't make sense if you look at sort of the wider world generally.
Well, in that case, like, it pushes, like, to grade schoolers, well, a good moral lesson is watching the movie Bonnie and Clyde, because they're a family who uses guns.
And again...
And then all the squibs at the end are awesome. Like,
that's true.
Right. The outcome is, like, always more happy and less death. But, like, those are not things that come from more guns and more family. Again, these are sort of incongruous, right? So it can, however, draw logical conclusions like this seems to generally fit the category of bad for humans, using measurable notions of quality of life like, you know, emotional patterns, quantifiable health metrics, and adherence to well-founded facts in the human knowledge corpus. Like these aren't
good,
making
good
judgments
thing for the autofocus group that it's you're not allowed to do fucking health studies on gun violence in the U.S. So.
Exactly. No, this is the thing. Yep. But like, if you put in like guns good, any sane model trained on a reasonable corpus would go, no, guns bad. Guns definitely bad.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the problem with the solution that these ultra conservatives are positing, but using the AI and whatever. So, so in spectacular fashion, it does the predictable thing and distinguishes between things like science and critical race theory that have historical factual groundings and concepts like religion and morality, which the corpus of all human knowledge clearly does not agree on. And in fact, mostly seems to lead to violence and generally conflict-based outcomes. So like, there is a way to train a bad model, but they didn't do that. They're doing the adaptive thing because they're like, oh, if we just like set this loose on society,
a good model, Because yeah. of course we're right. Like
foundationally right, and we know that to be true. So if mm-hmm. we just set this loose, it will learn the right thing even further than we could even train it, and yeah, that will be.
It's
good.
Not based yeah. on it's the issue they're running into isn't because they were naive about what would happen. It's because they are short-sighted in their convictions.
Yeah,
yeah. They were sure that they were right.
Exactly mm-hmm. that. Yes. So,
oh my God, is the end of your movie the Butlerian genocide from fucking Dune? Are we going to get rid of computers because the conservatives are like, no, the computers were wrong, not us.
No, it's much more of a happy ending.
Oh,
good. Because I don't
gonna
like
get
Dune that much.
Yeah,
same.
But we are.
Double same.
We will all get addicted to Spice, so.
That seems inevitable.
You know,
yeah.
You've met both of us. If anybody's going to get addicted to anything, it's people in this room right
now. Yeah. I want to be a navigator so bad.
There's hope, baby. There's
you
want to
be one of those weird sluggy guild navigators?
I sure do. Yeah. Hey,
that does sound like
I control
like you,
everything.
Well, speaking
really.
Of, back to this movie. So, this plays out over time gradually. As mentioned, the initial parts seem quite dubious, but our characters can actually see the positive changes over time. Willem and his cohort obviously start to panic and predictably do not understand the scientific underpinnings of their own technology at all, as we just mentioned. They blame...
One would assume that anyone they hired to like do the technical aspect that tried to explain something to them that they didn't agree with got fired.
Oh, for sure, yes. 100%, yeah. So they blame the liberals for corrupting their model, etc. It's always, you know, mm-hmm. someone else's fault. It's never like
sure,
that
of course,
you,
of course.
Yeah, uh-huh. you set out on the wrong path from literally step one. Yeah. Actual science folk make good common sense arguments for why these models of aggregate good for humans using all possible available information since the dawn of time are so much better than the obviously biased humans with comparably limited capacity to ingest and reason about knowledge. Like, it makes sense. Like these models can, this has happened in real life where they set this loose on medical texts and they go, hey, that drug affects thing B and thing B affects thing C. So that drug probably affects thing C. Things that like human beings never put together for decades because it's just impossible to like collate mm-hmm. all that knowledge. So like same mm-hmm. concept here. Like it just has more power to distinguish like the trends in the actual data. So, moving on, the silent majority can see the logic in this, and while recognizing the obvious pitfalls, legislation is created to continue to use the AI system to guide the political process while still keeping humans in the loop because there's sort of a balance to be struck there, of course.
Sure.
In the end, Willem is fully hoisted by his own petard, and good and logic wins out in the end, and it was because...
Great and correct use of that phrase, Zach.
That's bravo.
Thank you. I did my best. The moral of the story is kids can hear fucking swear words. No one's going to die from that. It's totally fine.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I'm so happy that's where your story went. Because it could have spun off into the dark version that I just assumed it was going to be.
Yeah.
You know.
I think our real life is increasingly spinning into that version. And so I wanted to do a different thing for sure. Yeah.
Yes, we're uplifted by the movies. We thank you so much for coming back to a theater, Zach.
You're a real Avatar 2. This time it takes place in New Zealand.
Yep.
Speaking of the like, welcome back, thank you for coming to the movies things. When I saw the Dungeons and Dragons movie a few, I guess, months ago in theaters, there was one of those at the start, and I have seen a lot of those at this point because I do go to a lot of movies, and I have never seen a cast more look like they were being held under gunpoint to record these things. Like Hugh Grant is giving this line, and it's like he has been giving nothing but wonderfully hammy villain performances for like the last 5 years, and I have never, and they've all been so good, and I've never been more convinced that he is just like disdainfully just like dripping venom than he was. And it's like, yes, we're so happy you came to see, like, oh my god. Yeah,
that's weird because that movie was pretty good and it felt like everybody was having a nice time being honestly, like
the movie. It looked like everybody was having a great time. It was, I think everyone was like at a festival or the premiere and they were like, oh, by the way guys, you need to film this thing, it's in your contract,
right. It's now hour 14 of this shit and like please let's just grind this out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sure.
Wow.
Sorry, I derailed us there.
Yeah. No, it's okay.
Y'all should watch that movie, and you should have went to see it in theaters if it you is didn't, fun. Because we deserve more of those. Yeah. It was very fun. Yeah.
I need to see that one still. So
it's on Paramount, I think.
Paramount, yeah, I know.
I believe it is, yeah.
Yeah, well, I just haven't been keeping up with a lot of stuff.
It's such an incredible, it would have, my God, this movie would have killed on cable back in the day.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
Much better than Kevin Sorbo being there. Ugh.
Well, I mean,
not my legendary journey, that's for sure.
Yeah. Hey, at least Lucy Lawless is still awesome.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, she's great.
She got
she's
more great. Awesome than Kevin Sorbo.
Just Kevin Sorbo.
Way more shitty. Yeah, yeah.
Everyone else involved in both of those series, as far as I know, is awesome. Yeah. Sam Raimi. Awesome.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Fucking Bruce Campbell.
Bruce
awesome.
Campbell.
Lucy Lawless. Awesome. The woman who played Gabriella. I feel bad for not knowing her name. Yeah. Awesome.
The guy who played Aeolus. Also, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I was wondering about Aeolus, and I couldn't remember his name.
Yeah. So.
Wait, she was on Monk?
Was it Monk or Psych? She was on one of those. I think Monk. Yeah.
I think it was, yeah, I don't know.
The
yeah.
blonde pixie.
Cool.
Pixie cut blonde, I think. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's not Trailer Howard from Monk.
Oh, then I'm
a different person.
Face blind it is, then. Yep.
You know, Trailer Howard was in 80 episodes of Monk, and Bitsy Schramm was only in, like, 30? Isn't that wild?
Man, it's been...
I always think of... I think of Sharona. Long. I never think of Natalie Teeger.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I forgot they were different characters. I thought you meant they just recast. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, no. Mm-hmm. No, they're different characters.
So anyway, Zach, I think Seth has an IMDb for you.
I sure do. Hey, Zach, are you prepared?
This is a doozy of an IMDb.
Oh, okay.
I do want to preface this with, this movie is based on a true story, and it is a true crime, not in the annoying podcasty way that we think of these days, but it's like it's based on an actual crime that happened.
You say annoying podcasty way. It is 60% of the podcasts I ingest, I think.
Case in point. For me, they're really not for me personally, but fair enough. Go with God.
All right. Yeah. So Zach, autofocus.
Hold on to your ass, Zach, because I want to watch your face. Yeah. I want to watch your face while Seth reads.
You can't. Right. I'm in the dark, but good enough. Yeah.
I think your mood lighting is good enough with that candle.
I can see that you're not holding your ass. I know.
It's starting to smell like body in here, and I am so hot. I've never been more hot in my life.
Well, you're telling me you're real daddy.
Oh, yikes.
Yeah. Well, all right. Autofocus. The life of TV star Bob Crane and his strange friendship with the electronics expert John Henry Carpenter.
What the fuck? I got carped again? I truly thought we were done with the carp, but I guess this technically is a carp.
Unbelievable. We've been sitting on this one for ever.
Okay. Amazing.
So John Henry Carpenter
it's not John Carpenter.
It's not the John Carpenter.
Oh.
It's just another man named John Carpenter.
Electronic expert, Carp is way into like Moogs and shit. Like that could be him.
It really checks out.
It's weird that they like convened in this way where they're both like electronics people, but no, they're completely unrelated in
weird.
Every way.
Okay. I was gonna say I'm looking at the cast trying to figure out who would be Carp and like nobody like that doesn't there's no like old curmudgeon
Defoe plays Willem Defoe. John Henry Carpenter
which does track because there's a lot of sex addiction in this.
Before I give you a little deeper dive, I do want to talk about one scene in the movie where Willem Defoe and Greg Kinnear's characters are out at a bar trying to pick up ladies, and so Kinnear is playing Bob Crane, the star of... Do you remember Hogan's Heroes?
Yeah.
Do you remember that show?
Oh, I know of it, yeah. I was going to say, I assume he's famous based on him being in the summary. Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Bob Crane, star of Hogan's Heroes, was murdered at one point.
Oh.
And it's still unsolved.
Yeah.
Whoa.
We can talk about that later.
Okay, okay.
But there's a scene, like the whole crux, one of the big cruxes of the movies is Bob Crane and John Carpenter, played by Greg Kinnear and Willem Dafoe, their friendship being based around filming themselves having sex with women, basically.
Yep, pretty much.
That's their whole basis of their friendship.
Now, okay, having tried to look up naked pictures of Willem Dafoe a lot in the past, this sounds familiar for some reason. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Well, they don't get naked in the movie, but anyway.
No. Oh, well, maybe not.
A lot of women get naked in the movie.
Oh, no, we definitely see some Kinnear butt. We get a lot of man ass, but we don't get to see, you know, the swinging salami, as it were.
No shaft. Yeah,
I want to
see
Richard
Roundtree, not in this movie. Yeah. So.
Wait, was this? Is this a time before stunt dicks, and they were trying to do full frontal at Willem, and they're like, "We just don't have the technology to reduce that thing. It's just too much."
This is 2002.
Oh, okay.
And also, this movie was directed by Paul Schrader, and Paul Schrader shows a dick. Like, he is not shy about showing dicks.
How do you
American Gigolo?
How do you put Dafoe in a movie and not have it fucking just hanging from the rafters? That's ridiculous.
Because he's kind of like a sad sack in the movie. Whole thing, like, there's a lot of scenes in this movie where they go out together and they pick up ladies. And the reason they pick up ladies is because Bob Crane is this famous, charming guy.
Oh, sure.
And John Carpenter is his hanger-on friend, essentially. It's definitely the way the movie portrays it at times.
Which may or may not be true.
May or may not have been true to life, Well, so there's a scene where they're at a bar and Bob Crane is, like, sweet-talking these ladies like nobody's business. And Dafoe walks up to one of them and he goes, "Hey, do you know what time it is?" And she looks at him weird, like, "What?" And he puts a wristwatch in front of her, and an LED guy with a giant dick starts banging a lady, and then the words, "Time to fuck," show up on the face of the watch. And that is a thing that happens in this movie. And I saw that, and I went, all right.
And then like, she leaves with him. So
well, she leaves with Bob, and he happens to be there.
I would have also left with him. That is so. You went so far around the clock that you ended up back at midnight. Like, that is insanity, and I love it.
Yeah.
Which, and one of the very few IMDb trivias for this movie goes to great lengths to explain that watch didn't exist at that time, but it's based on one that did.
Okay. So, I bet it exists now, or I would hope so anyway.
They know the name of the company, the type of band the watch had, it's how much it retailed for. Someone on IMDb really is interested in this watch.
This is like the Bacala and Feast of the Seven Fishes, where you're like, wow, did you have nothing going on that day when you were sitting down to IMDb?
Well, I assume it's like a vintage pornography collector or a vintage watch collector.
Both.
yeah
sure.
All right, I'll give you a little bit more.
Sure.
It's basically a biopic, but like a biopic of a man's like fall into depravity, essentially. And it's Bob Crane starts as like an actor / radio DJ / drummer. He gets to know John Carpenter after he gets cast on Hogan's Heroes because Richard Dawson, who was also on Hogan's Heroes and host of The Family Feud, knew John Carpenter. John Carpenter's whole thing was he was a Sony rep, and he was the guy that they would send out to sell things to celebrities. So they get involved into this circle. They start hanging out strip clubs together.
Richard Dawson, famous sex pest, right? Like that was his whole thing.
Yeah,
100%.
And basically, it's like a view of Bob Crane's career going up and then cratering out and like never being able to recover because he has developed this reputation as like the weird sex guy.
Ooh.
And the movie certainly portrays it as like he's the weird sex guy because he was always into stuff. It's just that he didn't have the outlet until he met John Carpenter. That's the main thrust of the movie.
And he's constantly like, we need to end our friendship. I know this is a problem. And then he just immediately in the next scene is like, let's have sex at people.
Yeah. I mean, these are like big Paul Schrader movie things. Yeah. It's about masculinity. It's about
the last temptation
unconventional
about
sexuality,
and
it's about addiction. Yeah. These are all Paul Schrader things.
This rings of this is a very interesting sort of gray area where it's like sex in Hollywood and like Eyes Wide Shut is like very glamorous and cool, and then it's like a shade away from that you have the Army Hammers of the universe, which is like extremely not cool all of a sudden. But like if you squint, they look kind of similar, like from a thousand feet. It's like, okay, you're just into some stuff, I guess. Like,
But like, and I think the thing about Eyes Wide Shut that I think a lot of people forget, because like it's the images that I think people really think about, and the weird party in the middle of the movie.
Yeah.
The thing that they always forget about is like the second to last scene in the movie is Tom Cruise goes to see Sidney Lumet, and Sidney Lumet is like, you shouldn't have gone to that party. And he's like, but what happened? And he's like, they were hookers and they got paid and we fucked them.
Yeah.
And that's it. And it's like, that's not glamorous.
That's true.
It's just,
well, and there is
just the word. That's just rich people and sex workers and rich people abusing sex workers.
And
like, that's,
and at least half of that movie is also Tom Cruise like dealing with the ethical dilemma of like, he acts like a child that like saw his first set of tits or something, where he's just like, oh my god, this is so
the
crazy.
The ethical dilemma of being horny is
yeah, exactly.
so much of that movie.
It's the thing we all went through when we were like
good movie
13.
Oh,
it is
god.
It is a
way
true
better
masterpiece.
Than this movie. Yeah. Way better than this movie.
But I guess that's why it's interesting. And this one sounds just kind of like very, very sad, which
I think this movie doesn't spend any time trying to make us think that there's anything glamorous.
Sure.
It's just
no.
like,
well,
no,
if
never.
You're
yeah.
if you're trying to get to a murder, there's not a lot of time for nuance, I suppose. But
sure.
I mean, but no, but the murder is literally the final scene. Right? Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. So like, yeah.
So Rita Wilson plays Greg Kinnear, Bob Crane's first wife, who he was married to for a very long time, had several children with.
Three children.
And then he eventually, they got divorced, and he married one of his co-stars from Hogan's Heroes. And they were married until his death, although they were in the process of divorcing at that time.
Yeah,
which
they,
the movie
I think
does
they were like
get
about
into.
To finalize it.
Okay.
When he was killed, his son from his, he has several children. I think he had five children overall. Yeah. One of his sons from his first marriage contends that he still thinks his second wife had something to do with it.
Because
she was the only person
named
in the
will. Right.
Oh, it's the Courtney killed Kurt situation. Sure. Yeah.
That doesn't really get into the movie. The movie doesn't handle female characters at all. Because it's a Paul Schrader movie.
Right.
Paul Schrader doesn't know how to do that.
That's true.
Ed Begley Jr. Is just a reporter in a scene, you know, when Hogan's Heroes is debuting, he's interviewing Bob Crane about Hogan's Heroes, and he's like, hey, what do you say about this movie, this show being offensive? And he's like, well, what do you mean? And he's like, I'm fucking Jewish. Like, you're making a concentration camp comedy.
Oh,
like,
I was going to say, I don't actually know what that show is about. That's
right. It's about
a bunch of Americans.
Allied POWs of different allied nations, mostly Americans.
Yeah,
in a POW camp with a
inept commandant
and an inept head guard who also knows what's going on but chooses not to do anything about it.
Yeah.
And the underlying theme of the show is like they could break out, but they get a new set of orders that like, you know, it seems like you guys are okay. You could do more sabotage on the inside than the outside. And that's what the whole show is about.
Yeah, they're always, like, doing minor subterfuge and, you know, being charming. But it's comedy also. So, like, they're doing minor subterfuge. It is the most confusing premise for a show, I grant you.
When
I remember
this actually happened
as
in
a
the
child.
70s? Sorry.
Late 60s, early 70s.
Yeah.
Pretty close.
As a child.
I remember watching it. And
watching it on TV Land.
And
I thought it was hilarious.
From a Jewish family also. Like, we had no trouble with it. My parents watched it with no issues at all.
I mean.
And because it was so heightened reality that, like, it wasn't a concentration camp. It was that in name only. Like, they were drinking whiskey with each other.
You have to do that.
Colonel Klemp is just you know, so stupid and not understanding that, like, it's making fun of Nazis most of
the
time.
The Nazis in the show are only Nazis because they happen to be German. They're in fact, I don't think there's ever any, like, they definitely don't have any swastikas in the show. There's I don't think they ever call them Nazis. They just call them Germans.
Why would you? No.
No. And I totally agree. If you're making a comedy, that makes total sense.
Yeah.
It's just like, the show has nothing to do with World War II. It has to, it's basically the Phil Silver show, only dumber and set during the war and not on an army base.
Right.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of wars we've had since then that anyone has tried to make a comedy out of. I guess MASH. Barely, but MASH was very serious at times. I think
the movie is less of a comedy because.
But like, certainly it's, not Vietnam or any Desert Storm or any of that shit. Like, that would be so crazy.
Shit. Yeah, that's a good question, actually, because I'm certain there's got to be something out there, right?
Probably.
What made your dad? No, he's just on an army base or a marine base, rather. Yeah.
In the army now. That's technically Desert Storm.
In the army now, that takes place in Chad, not Desert Storm.
Three Kings, starring George Clooney.
Ooh. Which is kind of a comedy, a little bit.
They did this
good movie.
They stole all the gold and shit. That's a thing that actually happened, I think, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What about the men who stare at goats?
Oh, well, yeah, that's a...
That was an MK Ultra thing?
That's not during the... Yeah, it was...
Yeah. It's not very good or memorable.
No.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a great clue in one of the movie games I play. Like, when there's an actor who is in that movie, it's a very easy pattern of letters to see, like, oh, and that in the mid 2000s, the men who stare at, like, what else?
It's the men, and then Nancy Reagan just pops out to your eyes because it's very, you've just seen it so many times.
Is that and Mars Attacks, because there's an exclamation point, are the two easiest movies to pick out in this movie game.
I mean, there is like Jojo Rabbit, right? That's a
but it's so recent.
Yeah. That is one where it's been 80 years since the beginning of World War II, I guess. Like,
Doctor Strangelove is another World War II comedy.
I think of it more as a Cold War comedy, and they're like spoofing on the Russian or the German scientists like joining up.
Yeah,
more so than World War II.
And
I mean, the producers is the movie.
Right.
It is the thing.
Sure. Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Hogan's Heroes doesn't happen if the producers doesn't happen. The producers is very Nazi and swastika forward on purpose,
but
because it's a Jewish man
completely
mocking everything there is about Nazism.
They went the right amount of far into the comedy where it's so very obvious that it's not.
It's two Jewish men being written by a Jewish man. Spoofing on this insane.
Well, that's to be or not to be also. Like in a
similar, that's true, and that came out in the '40s, didn't it?
Yeah, in a similar vein.
Which Mel Brooks remade in the '80s.
Honestly, there's kind of an upside down bell curve on that one. If it's literally happening in the time, you're doing like George Bush on Saturday Night Live, right? Where like it's literally happening this week, so we can make fun of it. But then if it's like 10 years away, then it's like, ooh, now I don't think we can. And then, you know, eventually far enough, we can make Jojo Rabbit. And it's, you know.
Yeah, there's.
Good Morning Vietnam is another.
Which is comedic in a way. It's it's a drama with a comedic performer.
Yeah. Well, and that was showing a very
point
niche
of that
side
is,
of the whole thing, too.
Sure.
Like, yeah, and the whole point of that is, like, it's still a drama. It's just that, like, here's the story of a guy who tried to make the day more bearable for people, and the way he did that is via comedy.
That's true.
It's a feel good time. I mean, by the same right, like Life is Beautiful has comedic moments, just barely, like just barely.
There is a, I forget who it is, there's a very famous Jewish European filmmaker who
it's not
has a very
Roberto
hard line
Benigni.
Stance. No. Has a very hard line stance about like you should not be able to represent the Holocaust in anything other than documentary format.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Huh? Sure.
I can't remember who it is, but like they were on a panel or something and talking about like their Holocaust documentary, and like Schindler's List came up, and they're like, "I know the intention
was good,
but this is not a thing you should do.
Fictionalize it." Right.
Really?
Yeah.
Did Schindler's List take a lot of liberties? I felt like everybody went like,
"Well, it's just
that
the
was
fact
a story
that,
that needed to be amplified. Like we needed
the
to
fact
know that.
That it the fact that it was in any way fictional was the objection that that this person had.
Okay. Right.
And like, if you go back and think about it, like you don't. Ray Fiennes' character does not get humanized by any means, but like there are humanizing aspects to his storyline. Like he has relationships with people that's like, even if this is a monster, he can still interact with humans.
Yeah,
like
yeah, right.
or like Oscar Schindler, who like did do a lot of good things, is like unambiguously the main hero of this movie about people suffering in the Holocaust. Yeah. Like,
I do not take issue with somebody having a 100% or 0% take on something like the Holocaust. That seems reasonable to just be like, nope, we can't do anything. There's no gray. It's all black and all white. That's it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I have just two more movies though.
go on. You Googled the list, didn't you? I know you did.
Yeah, I did. But Operation Dumbo Drop.
Oh my God.
Okay. What war is that? Is that
that's a Vietnam one?
Vietnam?
I would have guessed.
Oh, I guess the elephant. Sure. Elephant makes sense.
Yeah, because they like there was an elephant in there, and it was a casualty. It was blown up, and so the Americans were trying to replace it because it's good-hearted and fun. Because the
but
U.S.
they got an African elephant, not an Asian.
Uh-oh. And then the other one is The War with Grandpa.
Really? You know, I started that on Hulu a few weeks ago.
No, that was a goof. It was a goof. Oh, okay. That one's not. Fucking not at all. No.
Oh, boy.
God, that was a joke. Fuck.
But Operation Dumbo Drop isn't a joke somehow.
Yeah. I didn't make it deep enough in The War with Grandpa to know if there's like Grandpa is scarred by his experience in the war. Like,
oh, now, that'd be fun.
Lee, you this week specifically were talking about your approach to academic pursuits was not should I do a thing? It's can I do a thing? And I feel like there's a paper about
a
paper about Operation Dumbo Drop and the Vietnam War, like right on that line. Like that is right in your wheelhouse there.
Yeah, you know, I've been out of the game for a long time and I never really did any film study, so I don't want to embarrass myself.
That's
I guess I could fire up the old blog.
Yeah. If somebody
dillfood.wordpress.com.
If somebody came up with like a paper that was published with that title, I would read every word very meticulously.
Where does Operation Dumbo Drop fall in the great films about the Vietnam War? Yeah. Sure, why not?
Yeah.
That does remind me of one that I actually watched as a child, which was Kelly's Heroes, which was...
I know the title, but I don't know anything
about it. Yeah, which was a comedy, and for the longest time I thought it was like a prequel to Hogan's Heroes, but it's not. It's literally, I believe it is just a... war comedy movie about sabotaging the Germans during Operation Market Garden. You know, because we love Market Garden. So
The Great Escape is
similarly
sabotage escape drama or drama action movie about World War II. Stalag 17 also. I think if I remember correctly.
Oh, you have Catch 22 as well, sort of in there.
Right, Catch 22 though, like, is an absurdist comedy, which I think goes a long way, and that's mostly set in Italy. So, like, you're not really on, you don't have to.
Wait.
What?
We have disregarded submarine movies entirely.
Oh,
we. Austin will be fucking really upset with us.
I know. I was literally thinking about him. there's at least a few goofy submarine movies, right?
Well, okay.
But are they war movies?
Right. Well, or are they just military comedies? There's a difference.
That's true.
There is a difference.
And McHale's Navy is like...
McHale's Navy is like Sergeant Bilko / The Phil Silvers Show. It's just like, yes, they might be in service and they might be not in the U.S., but they're never like fighting.
And it's specifically that like, oh, you're on this boat that should have been decommissioned a billion years ago, but like we're not in wartime. So, okay. All right, I think we're good.
Okay. Yeah, but that was a good point. That was a good question, yeah.
One more that I've seen. War sports comedies a la Victory. Starring Michael Caine and Sylvester Stallone and Pele.
Yep, I was going to bring up Escape to Victory also. Because Escape to Victory, much like Hogan's Heroes, is like, well, you guys could escape, but if you don't escape, you can do more good for the Allies that way. And they have to weigh their options of like, are we committed to helping?
Subterfuge, or are we committed to getting the fuck out of this?
And then
or
at the end of the movie, almost are we committed to doing a draw with Germany in a soccer game? Because it's not even about subterfuge at that point.
No, it's not.
Although they do, that movie has its cake and eats it too, because they can escape at halftime.
And then they don't.
They choose not to. And then at the end, the crowd rushes the field and they just leave with the crowd. And we're to assume that they just get away.
Mm-hmm.
It did take place at the end of the war, so. You know.
Sure.
Yeah.
I have to say two things. One.
Uh-huh.
I am so happy we went on these tangents. That was the longest sidetrack we've ever had. Two, uh-huh. Related, my battery life on my phone and my computer are doing extremely well.
oh, good.
Oh. Yeah.
I was right. When you said battery life, I didn't expect the word
halfway through that tangent, I flipped my phone sideways and went, okay, and then just let it ride.
All right, baby.
All right. Yeah. Okay. So I guess getting back into this movie, I don't know that we need to really go deep.
There's not much to talk about. It sucks.
So the couple things I wanted to talk about, and I don't know if I was imagining this, there isn't a lot written on this other than, like, critics at the time were really, really liked it.
Mm-hmm. You said this is 02, right?
Yeah, 02.
Yes.
Okay.
But one of the things I thought was Renaissance Man just takes place on an army base.
Okay. Wait. Canadian bacon.
Fake war, but I like where you're thinking. Yeah.
This is fun. Yes.
Okay. So, mm-hmm. One of the things that I thought was interesting about it, but I don't know if I was just imagining it and trying to apply something that, because I was just looking to say about this movie. Wag the Dog is also a fake war. It's a fake war to distract from a presidential sex scandal.
Yeah, that's true.
Wag the Dog is very explicitly a fake war. That's the whole point.
Mm-hmm. Well, the same thing with Canadian bacon, which is explicitly a fake war because of to stimulate the economy.
Right, because all the factories shut down because the Cold War ended. Yeah,
precisely.
Oh, I don't think I've ever seen Canadian bacon.
It's
okay. I mean, I like John Candy a lot, and I like Rhea Perlman a lot, and I like Alan Alda a lot. But
Stephen Wright has a fun little cameo.
But in general, I think it's generally forgettable.
The guy who plays Benny in The Mummy is in it. He plays Roy Boy.
He does play Roy Boy.
See, I feel like Canadian Bacon has the same hallmark as a lot of the Pauly Shore movies for me, where they were on television incessantly growing up.
Constantly.
And so, on TV. Yeah, for some reason I thought they were like massive blockbusters because I was a dumb child. And then you grow up
and
you go,
same.
Wait, no, they were just the cheapest movies that Comedy Central could show.
Yeah, one of the other things I've learned about those Comedy Central movies is a lot of them aren't comedies.
That's true. Sure enough.
They just have a few jokes in them.
Yeah. Oofa boofa.
Formally, I think, and Seth, I don't know if you noticed this or if I'm just imagining things. Mm. I think the movie often switches between different, like, to look like it's being filmed on different things. So, like, when they're doing sequences from Hogan's Heroes, it looks like it's being filmed on whatever they filmed TV on in the 60s and 70s. Mm-hmm. And it's not just, like, the sequences where they're acting things from the show. It's, like, anytime Bob Crane is, like, in his own head thinking about his fame, he's on Hogan's Heroes, and it looks a specific way. The aspect ratio is a specific way.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Anytime the, like, main narrative of the story is happening, it looks a specific way. Anytime the, like, deviant sexual underworld stuff is happening, it looks like it's on videotape because that's what they were doing.
And there's a lot of Vaseline on the camera.
Well, yes.
It gets real sludgy.
That actually seems like a very nice way to sort of direct the audience in a subtle but like obvious way. Yeah.
So I get the impression that it was a directorial touch because, like, Paul Schrader typically writes the things he directs, and he did not write this.
No,
so
it's based off of a book.
Right, and he didn't even do the adaptation. Mm-hmm. So, like, my thought essentially is, like, this is his way of putting a stamp on it.
I was going to say, it sounds like he likes control, and because he didn't write it, he was like, now I got to get real stinky on it.
Yes, right. I mean, I think that's probably not far from the truth.
Yep.
That was the thing that was like most interesting to me about it. But at the same time, it was like, it seemed very telegraphed. It's like, sure, you're moving from one aspect of this man's life to another, and it's like, oh, okay, yeah, no, oh, we're changing that, yeah, okay, we're changing again.
Yeah, but they were switching them in between each other, right? Like, it was switching back and forth pretty constantly.
Yeah, but there is some amount of, like, you do want the director to trust you, the audience, or else you're like, I'm being pandered to, this is stupid. Like,
I don't know, I like it as like a general conceit for like how we're going to film different parts of the movie. It's just,
sure,
I think the movie itself I didn't like enough to particularly care that they were doing it.
Yeah.
On the plus side, the movie did inspire Lee to wear orange sunglasses indoors at all times.
So I said to Seth yesterday while he was watching it, I was like, this is a movie that really makes me like yearn for the days of everybody wearing very lightly tinted orange sunglasses indoors. And Seth said, okay, I guess. And then 5 minutes later, he goes, oh, he just put them on for the first time. Yeah. Oh, he wears them for the rest of the movie.
Yeah, I got it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. I get it now. I care. You made me care.
You made me care now. Yeah.
Everybody was on cocaine, so it was like, if I could turn the lights down 15%, I'd be so much more happy. Yeah.
Man, and but like Bob Crane throughout this is, well, at the beginning, he's a teetotaler. And like then slowly, like, it's like, oh, it's just a little cocaine. That's not a bad thing.
If you're trying to fuck 24/7, cocaine is it's all push and rope, right? Like, it's a terrible nightmare for all the fucking you presumably want to do.
In this movie. Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
I think the most interesting things to me are the like real life things surrounding the movie more so than the movie itself.
Sure. Agreed.
Like, for instance, the son of and first wife of Bob Crane have like come out in interviews and been like, by the way, he was filming people having sex with him for years before he met this dude. He was
is that
Is that a good thing to say? This dude just made it easier for him. Okay. Like,
John Henry Carpenter made it a lot more convenient because he had access to the technology.
Sure.
Right?
Mm-hmm. So, sure.
He was doing it on shitty film apparatus and then managed to switch over.
Yeah.
Yeah, but like from like a movie standpoint, it's like it's more compelling to have like another character there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also like he's depicted as being a very, you know, solemn church going man. In church every Sunday. His son is like, yeah, he in the last 12 years of his life he went to church exactly 3 times, and it was for like a baptism, his father's death, and his own death.
Yeah. Of course, yeah.
So, yeah. Which is a fun line. I mean, but
it is a good line. Yeah. There's also like questions as to like when he became actually close with John Carpenter versus when the movie is like the moment they met. They were like fucking two peas in a banging ladies pod, and like and there's conflicting reports from different people of like, yeah, they didn't really hang out. And then towards the end of his life, like, they definitely did hang out.
Yeah, because he was alienated from everyone else at that point.
Sure, sure. Yeah, so it sounds like we now know main character, how true that was to reality-ish, I guess. But, like, what about the Carpenter stuff? Like, I'm always curious to see, like, sometimes they embellish entire characters in these sort of, like, half-true, half-not movies. Like, what's the truthfulness on his
side? So, like, this, he was like an electronics rep for Sony and then eventually other companies, and he was definitely like would run in celebrity circles because he was their like electronics guy, and it's like, I'm having a crazy party, I gotta show off this new shit I bought, hey John, show, like, come to the party. And so like he would run with the circles that way.
Eventually he
became really close.
You made me really self-conscious that I don't have an electronics guy, and I realized that's a thing that only existed in the 80s.
In the past.
You just
in the past.
You go to Amazon now.
Yeah. I mean, Zach, you're our electronics guy.
I guess
that's a good point.
Kind of,
you really are.
And you're
since
the
you
guy.
Sent me my microphone and picked out my computer. Yeah, for sure.
Well, yeah, there is that, I guess. Yeah.
So I guess we got to... Jeez, do we have to film each other banging?
Man, we can not. Really, I think we can just not. Yeah. Yeah, it's fine.
Do you want to just like film me like walking around in my cool linen clothes?
I was gonna
jewelry?
Say
I'd rather do that.
I want to. I want to film us doing very benign Jackass style stunts, like. Like
slipping on a banana peel,
or somebody like you kick a razor scooter and it hits you in the leg.
Right. I was gonna say we're too old for that shit.
Yeah.
But Johnny Knoxville is literally 50 years old. But I'm thinking like, yeah, we're in our late 30s. Like we gotta dial it the fuck down for this. Yeah.
Yeah, ooh, for sure. Yeah. Like so, John Carpenter, like, and eventually towards the end of Bob Crane's life, when he couldn't really get work anymore, he did a lot of dinner theater. He specifically would, he owned like the rights to a few plays, and he would bounce between a couple different cities, and he had like standing engagements at dinner theaters. Mm-hmm. And at this point, like the last 2 or 3 years of his life, that's when he and John Carpenter for sure became really close, because John Carpenter would arrange his business trips around when Bob Crane was going to be in X location. So they could go out and like pick up ladies.
Because everything gets kind of sad at some point, and you go like, I guess this is the only thing I have left
pretty
for me,
much.
So here we are. Yeah,
and there are purported,
there's definitely
like,
a question of whether or not the women being filmed
knew about it.
The
family of Bob Crane, claims that they did. Some of the women.
How would they know?
Not all, but some of them. Well, the question is, like, were they told ahead of time that they were being filmed?
I guess.
And after his death, some women did come forward and say, I did not know. But his family upholds that they all knew, of course, because you...
How would they know?
It's a bad situation.
Yeah, I know what they're doing, obviously, but, like...
Well, his son in the early 2000s started a website called BobCrane.com where the premium membership tier allowed
$20
you to watch,
a month.
Watch all of the films and see all of the pictures of him
banging ladies,
women on camera.
Okay,
and also all of his autopsy photos.
Oh, wow! The internet was a wild place
back in the early
2000s.
Autopsy photos, the autopsy photos he put on the website to disprove the rumor that is furthered along in this movie.
Oh, okay,
that his father received a penile implant at some point to increase the size of his penis. Yep,
that's a thing I would want to do for my dad. Is like, no, my dad's dick was real. I'm gonna put it on the internet. What the fuck is that?
Yeah,
that is nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Should we talk about the murder case at all? Or
I was gonna say. I was gonna ask. Does this movie take a stance? You said it was unsolved, and you said
it takes I think that it definitely blames John Henry Carpenter for.
Okay.
So like,
the way it does it is like their friendship breaks up.
The penultimate scene is them on a phone conversation, and you know, Bob Crane is talking to Willem Dafoe, and it's like, hey. I just can't hang out with you, but we're still friends, right? And the camera gets all shaky as we're video camera focused on
right, because there is a lot of, whether it's video or when it's I assume it's not actually video, but there is a lot of switch between mounted camera and handheld camera in the movie to give the illusion of video.
And then you know, Willem Dafoe is visibly agitated, and you know, Bob Crane is like, oh well, I can still drive you to the airport, like we're good friends still, even though like I want to distance myself from you. And it's kind of confusing in that it's very duplicitous in what he's trying to say. And then there's the scene,
well, I think that's the like Bob Crane character throughout the movie is like, I want to be the family man, literal Disney movie star, and also I want to fuck ladies with you while you film it. Like,
yeah, pretty much.
I mean, again, Army Hammer is perhaps a bad example of this, but there's a lot of like Hollywood people that are this thing where it's like, I do understand that being sort of genuine and wholesome is part of staying in this industry, but also I do want to fuck weird. That happens.
So after this Willem Dafoe scene, then we have like a darkened scene where Bob Crane is sleeping in bed, and then somebody bludgeons him to death with a tripod,
which we see from behind, so we don't know who did it. And
But in the voiceover after that, he's like, oh, well, I mean, I don't know what happened to John Carpenter. I'm dead now. He maintained his innocence until he died of a heart attack 4 years after his second trial. Can you really blame him?
Like, yeah.
Did, mm-hmm. Is that how the actual death happened? Did he die by bloodshed?
Kinda, yeah. Yeah,
yeah. So Bob Crane dies, right? And then the police do such a shitty job, because he's in Scottsdale, Arizona.
There was no homicide department in Scottsdale, apparently, and at this
point.
Barely
and barely a forensics team. And so, like,
you gotta remember, this is like the 70s. Right. So
I think we had settled Arizona. They had a police department in the 1970s, yeah. I assume. It's not like the 1870s. Like,
they suspected John Henry Carpenter, but then he was acquitted because the judge just didn't believe it, I guess.
Well, they never brought charges initially because there was the DA wouldn't bring charges because he didn't think there was enough evidence.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. And then the evidence was rotting for another 20 years, and then in 1994 they brought him to trial again. They actually
DNA
filed. Yeah, they claimed, but you know, most of the DNA had degraded, of course, and they were like,
they were basically working off of blood samples that they couldn't get any conclusive evidence out of, and also a picture that appeared to display brain matter in John Carpenter's rented car, but also they didn't take any samples of what they thought might have been brain matter.
Sure.
And yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So I think there's a quote from a juror that's like, you can't convict someone of murder on speculation.
That is the fundamental tenet of our justice system, is benefit of the doubt. Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's like truly, I feel like the little I've done looking into this actual case is justice was done because a man who they didn't have any evidence to prove did a crime did not get convicted of that crime.
Yeah. Yep. Seems thing that should have happened. Yeah.
Yeah. And then John Henry Carpenter died of a heart attack 4 years later. Sure. And then they made this movie 4 years after that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the guy who wrote the book about Zodiac Killer that the movie Zodiac is based on wrote the book about this crime. So
okay.
Yeah. Just as for all you true crime readers out there.
Mm. Yeah. More of a listener, but yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's all that sharp object stuff.
I mean, that's fiction.
Yeah, but I know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, all right, so like I like Paul Schrader.
I was going to say I feel like we generally don't like him. I think you guys I would
Oh, him. No, his movies I kind of like.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Based on everything you have both said about this movie, I think you're both at a 5 right now. Like, I'm very confused. I don't think anybody liked it or disliked it. It's
5 seems a little high.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I'm grading on a Paul Schrader curve, cuz it's like I certainly have not seen all of his movies. He has either written, directed, or both many movies. For me, it's like Mishima, Life in Four Parts, and First Reformed are like masterpieces, true unimpeachable masterpieces.
I remember watching Last Temptation of Christ on IFC in high school or whatever.
Oh god, he was that? Oh, I didn't know that.
He wrote that. He didn't that's a Scorsese, but he wrote it.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
And Willem Dafoe plays Jesus in that.
Yeah. He sure does.
I've never been more attracted to Jesus.
What an interesting, interesting person to play Jesus.
Yeah, of all the people in the world.
And he wrote Taxi Driver, and he directed American Gigolo. Right. And like, there's a lot of
movie
really
called
famous...
Cat People that I thought was a David Bowie thing, but you know.
Well, okay,
so
David Bowie does the song from Cat People. Like, so he is the Putting Out Fires with Gasoline is from the Paul Schrader remake of Cat People.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly, okay. And it has Malcolm McDowell and Ed Begley Jr. in it. So
he's the guy that does things that make waves. Whether or not they're good, unclear, but yeah.
He has made truly great movies.
Yeah.
He is a really weird online presence and gets kicked out of Facebook online poker groups with celebrities for saying dumb, stupid shit. This is real. You can look it up. Mm. he's a very conflicting legacy type of person.
We're not talking like
Katrina Long,
David Mamet style, made a genuine turn, like decided to change as a person in his life at some point.
No, just like has really embraced the idea of like, I am open minded, but also cancel culture sucks. And it's like,
God damn it. Yeah.
Like saying dumb things about what women can accomplish. Mm-hmm. And like, really, dude?
Very
really?
Cool.
Like,
well, we've established he doesn't understand women as a concept. So, yeah.
True. Like, so anyone who wants to understand anything, like, wants to get a better idea of like who Paul Schrader is as a human being without like engaging in his art, the Katrina Longworth episode of Erotic 80s where she focuses on American Gigolo really gives you a good look at what Paul Schrader's got going on in the old noggin. Uh-huh. I highly recommend that.
Okay.
Yeah, like he has made true works of art, and the critics at the time, like Ebert gave this 4 stars, Peter Travers gave it 3.5 stars, it got great reviews. I don't see it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Agreed.
Like, this doesn't feel like one of those movies to me.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of, I guess I was surprised that it was a 2002. Like, it sounds like if this came out, well, and I guess the guy didn't die until, what, the 90s? The early 90s?
No, he died in 78, but the books weren't 78. Written about it until the 90s.
You mean John Carpenter died in the 90s.
Yeah, he died in 98.
Sure. Yeah. Well, mostly other guy, but yeah, this sounds like...
Bob Crane.
Yeah, this sounds like
probably
this movie...
Probably because 2 years earlier he saw Men in Black, and, you know, there's no reason to live anymore after
that's
that.
That's true. I have accomplished
Because he saw a perfect film.
Yeah. Perfect film. Like, why even try? Yeah. Why even try to continue making films?
Yeah.
It's 90 minutes. It has a perfect screenplay. Barry Sonnenfeld is a visual master. Like, yeah.
It uses papyrus for the opening credits.
Sure as shit does, just like Avatar. Yeah.
We have Vinny D'Onofrio.
I know this is not like a new thing. This is not a new opinion, but the idea that Vincent D'Onofrio doesn't have a fucking Oscar after playing that part is a fucking crime against cinema.
I know, it's really good.
So you're putting his Full Metal Jacket against his Men in Black? Okay.
Edgar.
Oh,
Edgar.
No question. No question.
Absolutely.
Are you fucking kidding me?
He does so well as the Roach.
I've never seen a human, look more like an alien. That's true.
Yeah. I mean, it didn't look like a human. It looked like a human in an Edgar suit.
It's somebody whose skin was on too tight. Yeah.
I feel like it's on the opposite pole. The two performances I think of, like in this span, and they're on completely opposite poles. Peter Weller as RoboCop, Vincent D'Onofrio as Edgar.
Oh.
They are. It is both a completely transformative physical performance in exactly the different, like, they're one is North Pole, South Pole, and they are both flawless and incredible. They're both, I've read interviews about both of them doing these performances. They're talking about, like, yeah, I got back together with my miming teacher to figure out how to do this. Like, they are approaching these characters from the same school. It is incredible. And, like, even in the vocal performance, it's opposite poles, but both of them are incredible, and I just can't gush about them enough.
That's
I
don't know much about Peter Weller. He seems like a not super fun guy.
PhD in art history.
Yeah. I mean, also he's a little man called Buckaroo Banzai.
Yeah. No, I know that much. Yeah. D'Onofrio. I feel like I have heard is a little difficult because he goes way too hard.
When I was still on Twitter, he was one of the people I followed on Twitter, and let me tell you, he has a very interesting Twitter presence.
Sure.
Never says anything offensive. He is incredibly liberal, which of course always works for me.
Yep. It's a good start.
He's a world class. If his Twitter presence is anything like his real personality, he's a world class weirdo, and I'm here for it.
Yes, like, exactly. Yeah. I think people mostly say, like, he takes the craft extremely seriously.
Yes,
but he is just
and so does Peter Weller.
Right, but they're just they're not, it, when they, when somebody yells cut and you're at craft services, it's not a good hang, like not a fun person to just like be around. And I've heard this also about Mandy Patinkin, a person who is,
oh, like, I've heard he's just kind of a cunt.
Mandy is not a cool guy.
He might not be. I don't know much about him recently, but like, you know, he has a lot of famous roles and people are just like, God, he's a lot. He's difficult.
Voice of an Angel. Everyone forgets he started on Broadway. Voice of an Angel.
He started, and I think now currently does that because nobody will put him in movies anymore.
Listen, Broadway opens its welcoming arms to any of its children with Tonys who went out into the world and no one could handle their theater kid energy. Like, that's what it does.
It is that.
That is what Broadway does.
Like, yeah, that's true.
Can you take about 20% off? No? All right, back to Broadway with you.
See, it's like fucking Lea Michele did it backwards. She started not in theater, and it was like, this was your home the whole time, girl. Mm-hmm. Like, come
it
on.
It turns
you know?
Out that that's you're true. Just a theater kid.
Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. I got very little else to say about this movie. I think we should finish up.
Yeah, oh, I said everything. Yeah. I said everything I could.
Yeah,
possibly
it's
say about
it's a weird true crime thing. Anyway, so the IMDb. Rating.
Oh, we could do money.
Oh, yeah, all right, sure. If you want to do that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've got it right here. Cost 7, made 2.7, which, like, an indie movie at this point, that's kind of, like,
but like par for the course. Ebert loved it. Critics, yeah, I think...
A.O. Scott really liked it.
Yeah, Lee, you already said this, like, the critics really loved it, and I'm like, eh.
Sure, but, like...
I feel like in years since, it's just become forgotten, like, and most of the critical stuff was, like... Kinnear is unparalleled, and like this was a point in time when Kinnear was getting Oscar nominations.
Oh
so
yeah,
it makes
oh
sense.
Sure,
like,
yeah. I mean, it was before you sang "Summertime" for Porky and Bess.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, did you say Porky and Bess?
That's what I said.
Porky.
Yeah.
And Bess.
Well, this is my version.
Porky's for Porky and Bess.
They already do a play in Porky's too. They do Midsummer Night's Dream. Like, we can't do two plays. Sure, like,
that's a lot for that audience. That's a lot.
Yeah.
So Lee, to your point, like an up and coming director could have a financial failure, right? And they, but the critics love it. And you're like, okay, that one didn't quite work with, you know, the populace, but like the next one will. Mm-hmm. This is not that thing, right? Like,
no, for me, like my take on this is like, I've seen things by Paul Schrader.
Mm-hmm.
I have not seen nearly all of the things by Paul Schrader.
Sure.
This is like bottom tier. Like it is, I see that there was like an approach that he was doing and it's just like, whatever. Mm-hmm. Like it's like, yeah, I don't know.
Is he still making movies? Was this like towards the end?
Oh yeah. He just had a movie come out like a month ago. Yeah. It was called Master Gardener.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, weird. All right.
Yeah.
Who starred in it? I was going to go see it, and then I was like, eh, I don't really care. Joel Edgerton.
Yeah,
Joel Edgerton.
Right. Sigourney Weaver is in it, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess if you do American Gigolo, everybody goes, I'm not going to not be in one of his movies.
No, I think right now he's cashing checks on First Reformed,
right.
Is what I think's going on. Like, that was his first ever Oscar nomination, despite all of the incredible shit he's made. Like,
sure,
yeah.
Sure. Eh, fair enough. Yeah. All right, what's that IMDb?
Yes. The IMDb with 14,000 votes is 6.6.
Oh.
It feels high.
That's just two people sleeping next to each other. All right. Unlike this movie, apparently.
Yeah. Oh, I do want to point out, there's one scene I wanted to bring up. Oh god.
Which one?
So there's a scene where it's in the IMDb quotes page. I kind of want to read the direct
do it
from it if I can find it. So Seth, if you want to talk while I'm doing
well,
this,
I love vamping because I
you could rate
Seth,
the movie.
You don't have to just rate the movie. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, all right.
What I'm trying to get you to do.
Sure. All right. So the original movie is kind of mundane, and I like Lee said, it is interesting to have like the different aspect ratios and film styles and everything, but in general it's not that interesting. I think it gets like a very mundane 4.
Okay.
Maybe yeah. a, maybe a 3.6.
3.6. Okay. Well, that's a person sleeping next to, I don't know, a 3, I guess. That's
or a giant butt.
Oh, it's a person pressing up against a butt. Yeah, I like that. That's
yeah,
nice.
It's a okay. big old booty. Yeah. not like big booty from Buckaroo Banzai.
I found my thing, Buckaroo, so you don't have Banzai. To keep vamping if you don't like.
No, you remember that the bad guy's name was Big Booty and. Yeah.
Oh, John Big Boutte yeah. in Buckaroo Banzai.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Gumbo Etouffee. Zach, for your film, which was just yeah,
because you to, not a Ben Shapiro production, but in the spirit
not
of.
A Ben Shapiro production using
no,
using
it's
a,
not in the spirit of it's in the spirit of fucking with those.
Yeah,
things.
it is antithetical yeah. to the Ben Shapiro.
Right, and I really like the fact that like the whole point of it is that they're so convinced of their own moral and intellectual and spiritual superiority, and yeah. then like of course when you end up in the real world, that's not what facts show.
It has to be right, and then empiricism takes charge. Yes.
Yeah, even though you know it's the opposite of yeah. Well, anyway, I really enjoy that. You get a 9.
Oh hell yeah! All right. Thank you, sir.
Okay, I'm gonna read a side here quickly mm-hmm. from the movie.
Okay,
a scene here. Watching their videotaped orgy, Bob. What is that on my ass? Mm-hmm. John. Well, that's my hand. Bob. Rubbing my ass? Mm-hmm. John. So what? Bob. Your fingers are up my cheeks. What are you doing there? John. It's an orgy, Bob. Bob. So you can just touch my ass? John. I thought you liked it. I thought it was her. God, what's the difference? Bob, the difference? You got your fingers up my asshole. John, sorry. Bob, fuck you. John, Bob, I said sorry. It's a group grope. That's an exchange from the movie.
Listen, I'm on John's side of this, but like, you know, that's a lot of gay panic for 2002, I think.
So okay, here's another thing.
They do, that does come up, yeah.
This is another thing, and this is a thing that's like very much in Paul Schrader movies, is like the sublimated gay panic mm-hmm. of Paul Schrader.
Sure.
Is like many of his characters are clearly have some sort of queer
right.
orientation.
If you explore male sexuality,
but he's afraid of it. Like Paul Schrader is afraid of
clearly.
Of it. Like yeah. he wants to show it, but he's always afraid.
Yeah.
Of it.
Yeah. It is very bizarre to try to earnestly explain male sexuality and then have that hard line on that thing. Just generally, mm-hmm. like that's
yep. Ugh. Yeah, it's
well, and like American Gigolo is all about this.
Sure,
Machina,
of course. Yeah,
A Life
yeah.
in Four Chapters is a biopic of a closeted gay man. Mm-hmm. Like this is
yeah,
like
it's right there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's yeah. a lot of other stuff that goes on in Mishima's life, but that's not what we're talking about
sure,
here.
Sure.
Another really quick thing, Bob keeps doing is like breaking up their friendship and then like pulling it back together because, you know,
family
and,
man, whatever.
And there's a moment where they're watching together a film of just Bob having sex with a woman and they're just having a conversation. And then Bob goes, it's making me hot. And he undoes his pants and starts jerking off in his pants. Mm-hmm. And then Willem Dafoe kind of like looks and like waits a beat. And it's like, puts his hand in his pants and waits a beat. And it's like, okay, he's not going to say anything. So then they're just both jerking off, yeah. having a regular old conversation, like, you know,
we are
it's not gay because we're both doing
right,
it.
Right,
yeah.
we're looking it right in the eyes and not acknowledging it. Yeah, it's bizarre. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's like that's yeah. this movie. It's Paul Schrader's whole thing. Yeah. Like this is the thing they do.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
This is clearly why he wanted to make this movie. Anyway,
yeah.
this movie's fine. I don't know.
Sure.
Don't seek it out. I don't even know that I think Greg Kinnear's that great in it. Greg Kinnear's much better in other things.
Yeah, like Porky and geez. Bess.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Man, wife of the podcast, Erica, had not seen As Good As It Gets, and we watched that in the year of our Lord, 2023.
Yeah, it's a little
it
rough.
It has some problems, obviously. But Greg Kinnear yeah. mm-hmm. is I mean, that should have been an Oscar performance. He is Spook.
I mean, I believe he was nominated. I don't know who won that year. Yeah. If it was 97, actually, I think it was...
Sounds right, yeah.
The fucking James Mason, no, not James Mason, James Coburn for Affliction, a movie directed by Paul Schrader.
Oh, weird. Okay.
Yeah. Huh. I could be incorrect, though. Man, anyway, man. Zach, your movie, I'm going with Seth. 9. Mm-hmm. Great. I was so happy that it ended the way it did. Yeah. I was not expecting it,
it was a little
very, very pleased.
It was a little too topical. I was a little worried that it was like, this is a thing.
No. You see, because like we're doing it was so topical that I thought it was going to play out like the real world. I thought it was going to play out like the real world, and then it didn't. Yeah. And that made me very happy.
Fair play. Yeah. Okay. Well, appreciated. All right.
It was a group grope.
It was. in a good way, though. Not in a bad way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, next week Seth will be doing a movie called Morning Glory, a movie Lee has already watched and told me at least one thing about a lot. And I'm excited.
One interesting thing.
It's a thing that involves counting, and I'm very excited to watch and count for myself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hmm.
It's a movie I've seen before. I'll put it that way. It was an aspect of the movie that I was ready for. Yeah. This time.
I don't think you were.
I was not ready for the first time.
Based on the conversation we had, it sounds like you were flabbergasted.
it really drags you, it lulls you in.
Yeah,
But like the first time I saw it, I was completely caught off guard. Yeah. But you know, we'll get into it next time.
We will. Okay, I do have to note before we end, it is now 9:29 p.m. and they said my power would be restored 1 hour and 14 minutes ago, and I'm still in the dark.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm surprised your candles, like, you got some real candle power there.
Do I? Mm-hmm. Can you see me just at all?
I could see you perfectly clear.
Okay. Yeah.
What do you think we're working with here, Seth? Like 6 candle power?
Yeah, maybe. Mm. I mean, but how many candle foot is it?
On the
I don't know, how many candelos is it?
On the Barry Lyndon.
How many lumens is it?
Is it Barry Lyndon style? I mean, it's like
actually, you
one
know, you
tenth
could be,
of 1% of Barry Lyndon. I think
you could be getting cheated out of your money in cards by Barry Lyndon and the Chevalier right now. Like the
That's
way
true.
You
look. It's yeah. true. He do, if, wow. Yeah. He does. Man, I just I'm so I engaged. Even though it's like 4 hours long, like I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
I'm weirdly not bored.
How many Frederick Dorr do you are you willing to bet on this episode, Zach?
All? I think all, yeah.
Oh, okay. I guess we're going to have a fucking duel later
yeah.
on.
Watch
Barry Lyndon. Yes.
Do not watch this movie. Do watch Barry Lyndon. All episodes.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah.
Honestly, most episodes.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
All right.
Hmm. Well, till next time.
Yeah, we really ran out of steam.
I was just trying to think of different measurements of light output.
Seth, in a perfect world, you would have come up with one final war movie, but
fuck. Time to fuck watch.
There it is.
the cut is there. It is. Oof, gabadoof.
I did panic. I think that was clear.